Hello, everyone, and welcome back to JTalk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and the next voice you are going to hear is John Steele. John, how are you doing, bud?
Hi, Stuart. Hello, everyone. What a weekend that was.
Yeah. There's certain things are more what a weekend than others, I should say. What we're going to do is put this over or give this podcast over to the listeners, and I put the call out for questions earlier on tonight, and we got plenty of responses to my request, and we've got lots of questions about Kyoto. Calm down, we're coming onto it. We've got questions about Omiya Adija, we've got some questions about the playoffs, and we've got some specific questions about players and stadia. John, are you ready?
Always.
Okay, so we'll start off with a couple of questions from Twitter. The football viewer tweeted, "What happened to Kyoto? 13-1? ?" And Bablu Jack, who's also a Kyoto fan, said, "I've mentioned this before, but do you think Sanga's lack of summer signings hurt their form?" Now, just to give a little bit of context to what happened on Sunday, you'll remember that Kyoto needed a win and other results to go in their favour to finish in the playoff spots, while Kashiwa Reysol were already champions. And yeah, Kyoto Sanga fell to a hard-fought 13-1 defeat. I'll just repeat that. 13-1 defeat to champions Kashiwa Reysol. If you've been living under a rock, you probably won't know that Michael Olunga, the Kenyan international, scored 8. Cristiano got a hat-trick, and there were 2 other goals as well from other players. I can't... Segawa was one. Probably Mateus Silva was another one. I don't know. 13. Jesus Christ. I mean, I haven't seen anything like that before, John. Have you?
No, and it's just one of these things where, you know, we do have Kyoto fans who listen. I can only say that I winced inwardly and outwardly when I saw this result, and then many times watching the highlights. It's a bit like watching a friend or anybody getting injured, you know, during a game or just in daily life. You know, when sometimes someone like... I'm quite tall, Stuart, so when I smack my head on the arm straps on the train here, which is quite often,
sure.
Usually some kindly soul nearby will sort of have a physical reaction to that, 'cause it's like that hollow sort of thud, and then me just going like, fuck, like, yeah. That was me watching the highlights, you know, all the way through, and... yeah, it was very rough. I think it's a weird situation where we could either talk about this, we could talk about it for an hour, but the numbers really do tell the story. Kyoto shipped 13 goals. Kashiwa were absolutely deadly in terms of finishing, but goodness me. I just don't know what happened. The Kyoto team had a complete mental or nervous breakdown, I think, certainly after... you know, a couple of goals, and we talked before we pressed record tonight about how even early on in the second half there was just so much space that it looked as though Kyoto had never seen the sport before, basically, and that's not it is, you know, we talk about football, it's not life or death, but I think if I was a Kyoto fan and I travelled, I paid money, I would have had to riot in solidarity at the end of the game. I don't think you would have been able to keep me off the pitch. That was, embarrassing. Don't use the word lightly, you're shameful. And I think Kashiwa are a good side. There's no shame in losing at their ground, especially when they're celebrating the championship. But, the Kyoto players' effort was absolutely pathetic. And, I would think a donation from their wages to cover the cost of the fans who travelled, or, you know, donation to a, you know, charity of their choice wouldn't go amiss. It was that bad. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to add stuff onto that. I think that just I spoke before we started recording that I've It's very rare that you get all these kind of elements coming together that a team with so much on the line like Kyoto had. Basically, they had their bubble burst after 30 minutes and they had nothing left to play for because they knew they weren't going to overturn a three-goal deficit at the champions. And then as soon as Olunga got the scent and as soon as the other players realised that, well, Olunga is only, what, 7 goals behind Leonardo, we can help him possibly win the J2 top goalscorer award. And they just kept going and going and going and going. And it's quite rare to see that. I think we've both, the teams that we support both kind of in Japan and kind of back home in the UK, we've seen them lose 5, 6, 7, or 8 goals, but I've never seen double figures. And it's, yeah, it was, I felt bad. Like I didn't like, and every time a goal update came, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, calm down. Like, there's no need for any more. But they're just, yeah. And Ichizo Nakata can't keep his job. I think he's done a, this is a huge if, but if you take the Kashiwa result out of Kyoto's season, they actually didn't do that badly. They had a true identity. They had a way of playing that kind of suited them. However, he can't possibly stay. He just can't. They need, because this result, if he stays, this result will hang over them all off season. If they bring someone new in, they can quite rightly say, right, we have someone else in place now. But some of the players have to look in the mirror and say, what did I do on that day? Did I earn my salary on that day? And they can't, is the true fact of it. And they should pay for the travel. They should pay for the ticket for the Kyoto supporters that rocked up, because, I mean, it's hard to think of a grander waste of money. I think I don't know. Like, it's just a stain that won't be washed out until Nakata leaves, and he won't struggle for another job because he's shown that he can do a really good job there. But I think a lot of the players will look in the mirror and think, oh, I don't know if I can handle being part of that particular part of the club's folklore for too much longer. So I'll get off the train right now. I think. Babalu Jack's point about not strengthening the summer is something that it chimed with me, because we've spoken before about Kyoto playing, especially earlier on in the season, very high pressing game. They played with pace and they played really high up the field. And I wonder if Babalu Jack's point is a really good one, in the fact that they probably needed a little bit of, an injection of kind of energy or an injection of depth into the team that they didn't seem to have. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think it's a cliche that we've talked about, I think, pretty much every year since we started the podding. But 42 games is a long time, and I think if after 30 games you'd said, you know, Mito and Kyoto, and neither of them is going to make it into the playoffs, I think that would have surprised a few people. But it really is, you know, players get tired, they get leggy, and you just need to be able to freshen up, I think, a little bit more than Kyoto are able to. I think your point's valid, that they've made a huge improvement year on year from last season. And it's kind of a shame that their campaign is going to be defined and remembered by this game, this 13-1 game from the weekend. But yeah, I think in hindsight, you can see that they, in the summer, they started to look a bit less impressive and wobble a bit more. And yeah, that never really righted itself. And they seemed to lose a bit of their swagger, didn't they? They were certainly swagger free at the weekend. I think he might have been okay, Ichizo Nakata, if this had been like a dead rubber game.
Mm-hmm.
He might have gotten away with a drubbing of that nature if they were 15th, say.
Mm.
But I think the fact that they'd gone into that game with a chance of making the playoffs, you know, with a win and favourable results, and no one's quibbling that they lost against Kashua, but it's the manner of the defeat and the performance. And I think another thing that's going to count against him is that the new stadium is going to be ready, you know, for next season. And I think anything that is going to potentially, you know, be a buzzkill for that, if I was in the front office, I would be... I would be anxious just to make sure there's a clean slate, and that might even extend to certain players. You know, that there might have to be a few tough conversations where you say, "Look, are you want to play professional football or not here?" Because you know, that game, the end of the season is when players do play for contracts. Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
And the impression you get. I mean, if I was I'd be the sort of volcanic year owner from the 90, you know, Luciano Garcia, but like, I would have fired everybody. I would have been like, anyone with even the tenuous connection to that starting 11, I'd be like, yeah, you're gone. it really was that rage inducing a performance. So I mean, obviously that's a step too far, but I think, yeah, they will want to start the new season at the new stadium with as clean a slate as they can. And maybe there'll be some lessons that can be learned. Again, I don't think the first 41 games, I think they had a pretty good season overall. But a game of that, a game which would be, you know, back home a pop quiz question for like years to come. I think that's bad, isn't it? And I think that will lead to some changes.
I think so too. Okay, on to our next question. Ardija 01 Talk, Senor Steve said, can Ardija make it through the playoffs to J1? If they do so, do you think they have a squad fit for purpose in J1? How do you think Kashua Reysol and Yokohama FC will do in J1? So, a lot to unpack in this question. I think the headline is that Yokohama FC finished second after beating Ehime FC 2-0 at home at Mitsuzawa, which means that they finished second and they finished in the automatic promotion spots, and they will be playing in J1 next year. Omiya drew 1-1 at Tsuegen Kanazawa, meaning they finished third in the league. They have home advantage during the playoffs. They'll face Montelio Yamagata in the playoff semi-final, while Tokushima Vortis will host Van Fore Corfu. John, before we get onto Omiya, a word about Yokohama FC. I thought last year was a bridge to... I thought it was their last chance, because Iba had a good season and Leandro Dominguez had a season for the ages. But what I didn't count on is the emergence of youth that came in during this season, and the actual depth that Yokohama FC had. They had, when injuries or when late season kind of tiredness came in, they could rotate and they could bring in some good players. I mean, it's notable that Yusuke Minagawa came in halfway during the season. He was the one who scored the penalty to put Yokohama FC on their way. And it's kind of difficult to argue against them being the second best team in the league, because after the halfway point of the season, they rampaged through, and they it's difficult to remember a bad performance from them. So they are worthy second place team, I would say.
Yeah, I think strength in depth. I mean, considering we just touched on Kyoto's perhaps lack of strengthening in the kind of summer transfer window. Yeah, I think I looked at the bench for the game. I think they were always likely to beat Ehime in the game on Sunday, so it wasn't a great surprise that they did. But, you know, Iba was on the bench, Leandro Dominguez on the bench, you know, as well as Kazu, of course, who came on for the last couple of minutes. I'm not sure whether you'd class that as strength in depth, but it's star power.
It's
not to be sneezed at in the J League. I think something that the coach whose name I'm blanking on, his name, Shimotaira, has done is he's sort of youthful enough that I think, considering he's younger than Kazu and similar, same generation as quite a few other players, shall we say, not trying to be rude, but it's factual, there's a good togetherness in the squad, which I think carried them through a few games where they weren't playing well, especially during that long unbeaten run they had, right, 17 or 18 games in the second half of the season. I think a good example would be that when the penalty was given in the game on Sunday, even though it's quite a soft, it's a bit of a soft decision, I think.
I think it was a home decision. I think that's what
it was. It's funny for me, because I've been going to York Arm FC for many years, that they were the big team and they got like a big team call.
Mm.
That only happens if you have like Shunsuke Nakamura and players like that in your team. Anyway, Shunsuke Nakamura picked the ball up. He wanted to take it. Take the penalty, but Minagawa just came and took it off him and was basically, I'm the penalty taker.
Mm.
No Janken, you know, no histrionics.
No.
Just, okay, you're the penalty taker. And then it was dispatched.
It should be like that. And all this bollocks, can I say that? I might have to edit that out. But all the stuff all the stuff that kind of Janken or kind of the arguments between people who are saying they should take the penalties, that's nonsense. Mm. Just Minagawa is the penalty taker and he scored a good penalty. And I'm not saying that Shunsuke would have probably curled it into the top corner like a work of art. But
yeah, Minagawa, well, I always think it's amazing that these things aren't decided before the game.
Well, they obviously are decided before the game, but
for me, that's like attention to detail, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, Yokohama City, as well as having that togetherness, they also had a certain sort of quiet confidence, I would say. Some of the football that they played, and Ehime were no great shakes, but Yokohama City for many games play good possession football in their own half, and they can move it forward quickly with players like Matsuo on one side, Nakayama on the other, as you mentioned. And when they scored, you know, they're 1-0 up in a pressure game, but they did the Bebeto baby celebration. I'm not sure which player just had a kid, but you'd think that in a pressure game that wouldn't be the case, but I think they always had a certain confidence that they were gonna get the job done. I think now they will have to strengthen, because I don't think the squad as it is a J1 level team. With that in mind, though, I think they will strengthen, because I think there'll be money available. And Yokohama is a nice place to live, he says, having just bought a house in Yokohama. it's not difficult to attract players. We've talked about this before, and this is not a dig at Gifu, but at provincial clubs in general, if you want to attract players, being in the sort of greater Tokyo area makes that about a million times easier, I would think.
It does.
I would say as well for Kosuke Saito, who scored the second goal, his acne is incredible. I suffered very badly with acne as a teenager, to kind of a medical level. And it's good to see a guy with acne in the front and centre.
Is he representing
all these photos? You know,
he's representing. I think
good for him.
Very good for him. I think like something that I'd urge the VIPs who appear on the Big Brother pod, on the JTalk podcast, I would just urge them to look at the lineup that Yokohama FC put out, because in arguably Yokohama's biggest game, I say arguably, like it's the biggest game since they hosted the playoff kind of semi-final last year when they lost to Verdy in injury time. But like this was... they had automatic promotion on the line in their hands, and they left Ibra on the bench, they left Leandro Dominguez on the bench, they left Daisuke Matsui on the bench, and they played in their 4-2-3-1 system. They play usually three people behind a central striker. But the central striker was Minagawa, not Ibra, and behind them they played, like you said, Saito, Nakayama, Katsuhiro, and Matsuo Yusuke. Three players that really Shimotaira has brought through the ranks, because I don't remember them playing pivotal roles under Tavares. That's not to have a dig at Tavares.
We basically had never heard of these players or seen them. Yeah,
but they came in and they look bloody good. They're in the starting team on merit, and it's kind of difficult to explain that to people who only know the names Leandro Dominguez and Ibra, because they are the big names. They had such good seasons last year. But these young players, I mean, the one that kind of probably people know most about, Koki Saito, was on the bench. I mean, he's another player that they can call upon, and I'm sure there must be more. I mean, they've brought these players in, and they look really good. I think next year they need to kind of sort out the defense, because they need an injection in there, because Minami will be 40, I think. I mean, you've got Inoha, you've got Calvin Jongopin, who's had a really good year. But I think playing against Ehime and Gifu and Tochigi is slightly different than playing against...
Slightly different
than playing against the cream of J1.
Different questions will be asked.
They will be, but... You know, they've earned this place, right? And on top of that, on
Shima Taira, I think what you're talking about with the team selection and the tactics and even the kind of relaxed way they went about the game on Sunday, every game's been treated like it's just another game.
Mm.
There hasn't been any like, this is the biggest game of the season, or, you know, everything's riding on this game. There's been no stress really for the players, I don't think.
Do you know what? The thing that sums it up for me is that I've seen him wear loafers with no socks on the sideline. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he dresses like that, the players look at him and think, well, he's relaxed. We should be relaxed.
Yeah, I swear to God he's wearing eyeliner as well. I'm fully prepared to be proved wrong, but I'm just throwing that out there.
The thoughts of John Steele don't reflect the thoughts of the J-Talk podcast.
There's a level of definition there which I struggle to achieve without cosmetic help.
We've just passed midnight, John. You don't need to reveal your beauty secrets. But
J-1 fans can judge for themselves.
They can. Omiya. So Omiya finished the season like you predicted. 3 draws. That's very... You told me you got stuff wrong, but you got nothing but right stuff with regards to Omiya. And they finished with 3 draws. And we had like I said, we had a couple of questions. Like Steve gave us one. There is another one from, just let me check, Brian J. Smith, who said, yeah, 3 straight draws for Omiya to end the season. Any reason to think the playoffs won't end disappointingly also? I mean, the thing to remember is that draws will see them into the final against the J1 team, because they have home advantage. I don't know, like, me and I think Yokohama are better than them, I think that they will progress against Yamagata, because I don't think Yamagata will beat Omiya at the next 5. They're a difficult team to evaluate, I think, because finishing 3rd is, like, objectively a pretty good finish to the season in a 42-game, 22-team league. It's no mean feat to finish 3rd, but they had it in their hands, and then, you know, with 3 games left, they drew at Kanazawa, they drew at home to Fukuoka, and who else did they draw against? Niigata?
Tochigi?
Oh, they drew at Tochigi as well.
I mean,
they, not to, have they thrown it away? I don't know, that's a difficult call to make, because Yokohama have been so good, but I wonder how good Omiya actually are.
Well, I think every time we've been asked, we've talked about Omiya this season, I think we've ended up with splinters in our arses from sitting on the fence. And I'm afraid we still aren't. I mean, the fact that they've drawn the last 3, does that mean they're now, it's time that they're gonna turn it on and like batter somebody like Yamagata, or is it gonna go the other way and they're gonna lose? It's just really difficult to predict. I think to some extent they have blown it by not winning, you know, two of these last 3 games. Although, looking at the players' kind of body language and Takagi's body language at the final whistle on Sunday, they definitely felt like, they'd missed the trick. But I think they could have won the game anyway against Kanazawa. They still would have finished 3rd. So I think we should perhaps factor in the sort of disappointment, the mental side of it, which can affect teams quite often. The 3rd place team in the playoffs is, you know, the odds are stacked in their favour in terms of the way the playoffs were, but mentally they're not quite there because they're disappointed that they've missed out on automatic promotion. The 6th place team tends to do well because they're just kind of happy to be there, sort of thing. Because Verdi knocked off Omiya, didn't they, last year
they
in
did,
the semi-final.
Yeah.
Yokohama, at 5. So we'll see. I tend to think, and I think I'm just repeating myself, but Omiya have got a really great team on paper, but they don't always demonstrate that in a full 90-minute period. So, for example, the game against the Kanazawa at the weekend, they went 1-0 up with quite a fortunate deflection, I think.
They did, yeah.
And then it could have been 2 when they had a shot that hit the underside of the bar and bounced down on the line but didn't go over. But then Kasahara, their goalkeeper, had to make a string of pretty good saves. It was almost as if they borrowed Cervantes from Fukuoka for the day.
Yeah.
And on another day, that could have been, that could have gone very wrong. I think Kanazawa could have. They're a dangerous team, aren't they? And they could easily have been back in that game a lot quicker, and then it perhaps could have gone the other way. So I don't know. Like you said, they seem to be draw specialists at the moment. They're just kind of lacking that little bit of edge to win a game, but that might not impede them too much to the weekend, because a draw is enough to get them through. So, sorry, Steve, can't give you a conclusive answer. I think they will get past Yamagata. I agree with you. But I don't know if I fancy them against Tokushima or Bukofu, to be honest. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, well, I'll take this opportunity to just introduce new listeners to the playoff system in J2. So what happens is that third place will entertain sixth place, which in this example is Omiya Adija hosting Montedio Yamagata, and fourth place hosts fifth place, which is Tokushima Vortis in fourth. They will welcome Vanfori Corfu to the Pocari Sweat Stadium. In the rules, the home side only needs to avoid defeat to go through, to progress to the next round. And the higher seeded team will always have that home advantage. So, for example, if Omiya lose against Montedio Yamagata and Tokushima Vortis lose against Vanfori Corfu, Vanfori Corfu will host Montedio Yamagata in the J2 playoff final. Whichever team comes out of this foursome on top, they will face the 16th place side in J1. And I know Steve Baum is very kind of inquisitive about this. He wants to know which of the teams that might be in 16th place in J1 would be best for any potential playoff winner to face. I don't really know. I'd say Sean and Belmari, because I think they look pretty bad, but at the same time, I don't watch enough J1. So, but I think what I want to do is I want to go on record as saying I think both Omiya and Tokushima will progress. I think they will, and I think that they will play off at the NAC 5 for the right to host, for the right to travel to a J1 team. That game, I don't know. I kind of fancy Tokushima, to be quite frank. That's the way I see. If you had to pin me down, I would say that Tokushima would be the team to progress from this group of four.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think we're talking about such fine margins in these one-off games that we could well prove to be wrong with our kind of gut feelings. But Tokushima looked very impressive, didn't they, in their game, winning 3-0 against Yamaguchi, was it?
It was, yep.
Yeah, so I think that's 7 straight wins for them.
No, it's not, because they lost against Yokohama FC, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so 6 wins in 7. Okay, so, but yeah, basically, out of them and Omiya, they're the form team if they get through.
They passed the eye test as well, right? You watch Tokushima and they look good. I mean, even when they were beaten against Yokohama FC, it was a really late goal from Yokohama, Tokushima just looked good, and they've looked good before without kind of producing results, but now they are producing results, and I think that they might be a bit suspect at the back. They've conceded the most goals out of the teams in the playoffs, but they've also scored the most goals of the teams in the playoffs, and so I think yeah, just trusting my eye judgment, I would say Tokushima. I would put Ricardo Rodriguez as his side as the team to beat in the playoffs, I think.
I don't think Kofu will be looking forward to facing them on the weekend. I think as a sort of neutral but very fervently interested observer, I think the Tokushima Kofu game is the more interesting, more intriguing tie because I think it's a bit harder to see which team is actually better, if you like. I think Tokushima are in better form for sure. Kofu not an easy side to play against. Quite a tricky customer, I feel. So that'd be a good game. I think my issue would be we're off football now, but just on scheduling. I don't understand why these two playoff games are taking place on the same day at the same time.
Yeah,
they're
both going to
kick off at 1:05, or more likely 1:09.
Sure.
On Sunday afternoon. I can only assume this is to avoid any team having the, in inverted commas, unfair advantage of an extra 2 hours preparation time.
Sure.
For the next game. But to me, I was kind of thinking the whole point of these playoffs is to drive interest and get more eyeballs on the league. I don't understand why one of them couldn't start at 1 p.m. And as you've mentioned, the format means there's no chance at extra time. Couldn't one of the games kick off at 3 p.m. and then you get like a Super Sunday sort of scenario? I mean, surely the clubs would prefer that, wouldn't they? I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know why they don't know why they're at the same time. It's just
doesn't make any sense.
No, make them as standalone events. Don't make people choose between them. It's just I don't know.
Even the second round, if you like, the J2 playoff final the following weekend is at 1 p.m, which is the same time as all of the last round of J3 games, where you might have Fujieda and Gunma might be duking out for that second spot, which could have implications for Kagoshima in J2. So I can't understand why there isn't someone on top of this who is other than me.
Trailblazer, you see things that other people don't. That's what geniuses do, John. But I agree with you, and that it's just odd that
they're just making people choose which game they want to watch. Yeah. And it's like in this it's 2019 for crying out loud.
I want to watch both of them.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, of course, I've had this rant, I'll watch neither, but if I was free, I wouldn't like. I don't want the J League telling me to choose.
Yeah,
so infuriating.
Calm down, John. Calm down. We're going to move on to some managerial news. So, of course, one of the questions we got was from Alan Gibson. How you doing, Alan? Mito Hollyhock losing manager Hasebe. Are they done? Avispa getting Hasebe. Will it make the difference? So. Just to give some context to this, Avispa Fukuoka let their, I don't know if he's interim manager, but he's brought in after they sacked Fabio Pecchia early on in the season. Kido was released at the end of the season, and they brought in Mito Hollyhock manager Hasebe as well. And so he's a good manager. And before we get onto that particular question, just to go through another couple of things that happened recently today. In fact, Naoki Soma was, I don't know if he was ejected from Machida Zelvia or whether he left of his own accord, but he won't be manager next year. He presided over a kind of a season which had a decent finish because they beat Montedio Yamagata, but overall a kind of disappointing season given what they
did. I think a lot of Machida fans would have wanted to eject him from a cannon.
So,
into the sun.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be all sorts of rumours about Machida with the money and the investment that they're getting into their club. Also, Yasuhiro Higuchi will be returning for FC Ryukyu next year. I think despite what happened in the middle of the season when they had a bit of a falter, I think for him to have kept Ryukyu basically out of relegation trouble for quite a long time, it's no mean feat considering they lost Park Il-gyu, they lost Nakagawa, Yuta Togashi, Koji Suzuki. Like, they did really well last year. I think there'll be certain other managers who will be on the hot seat. I wouldn't be surprised to see Makoto Kitano leave Gifu by the end of the week. Ichizo Nakata, we've already talked about. Yun Jung Hwan was unveiled as Jeff United manager. As we said, John, we said this at least 2 months ago, I think. We said that he would be a good appointment. And so there's lots of stuff happening. Alan asked about Hasebe, but generally, are there any kind of managerial posts or managerial appointments that you think are worthy of talking about?
Yeah, I think on the Hasebe one, he's earned his chance at a big job. And I think what a glance at the league table for a kind of outside observer might have you scratching your head at the move, but it's probably worth keeping in mind that by pretty much any definition, certainly by J2 standards, Fukuoka's a big club. With a nice stadium and more resources than Mito, so I think he's earned his chance at a bigger job, shall we say. And I think what they've done, which is smart, is they've hired him right now, so yes. He's got the full, like, you could literally have, you couldn't have any more time to get the team ready for next season, because I think by big club standards, you know, this year was pretty desperate for Fukuoka.
Yes.
And he will, they'll certainly improve next year with him in charge. Whether it will be enough to get them where they want to be, up in the playoff contention, we will wait to see. I think with Jeff and Yoon, if he can't whip that sorry bunch of losers into shape, it's probably time to just pack it in. So we can expect to see him sort of standing on the roof at the Fukudenshi Arena, like Wanis Schneider, probably by mid-April, I would suggest.
Wanis Schneider, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, but I think with Yoon, we talked about him being a good appointment for Jeff, but I think if we're being honest, he'd be a good appointment for any J2 team, because he's probably a J1 manager. So it'd be very interesting to see how he gets on, because I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, he ended up clashing personality-wise or professional-wise with the suits at Saigon Tosu.
The suits.
When he was boss there. Yeah. Owners. And Jeff is a pretty poorly run club in that regard, based on what I've seen over the last decade.
Breaking news.
Yeah, so I wonder what kind of discussions they've had about players he's allowed to bring, or control he's going to have over what is done. Because I think the issue in the past has been sort of basic cluelessness on that front. But he's a strong personality, and I think that is probably what Jeff need. And his record is good, so we'll see. Machida definitely needed a change of direction. I think they reached the point where it's like they would like anybody,
yep,
other than Naoki Soma, and they just don't mind what that leads to. It might lead to a case of, you know, having to be careful what you wish for, but I think he had certainly taken the club. He's like, this season was the definition of someone taking the club as far as they could go and then having it regress on them.
It wouldn't surprise me to see Gifu make a run at Naoki Soma. Like, I think that, you know, you get to times when you reach your limit. I think, not to broaden it out too much, but Pochettino left Tottenham Hotspurs.
He is available, it's true.
He is available. He came to the end of his run, basically. His message became tired, I think. I saw someone, I can't remember who it was, saying that he hadn't improved the club, but that was a complete clown comment. He improved the club, but his message became stale, I think. And I wonder if someone like Naoki Soma, I mean, he's been jettisoned by Machida, but maybe he wants a change of scenery as well. Maybe he wants a break. And he got Machida promoted up from J3, I think, and got them to a third place finish in J2. And I think that, yeah, he won't be short of offers for jobs, I wouldn't have thought.
No. I think as well, what I'm coming round to thinking as I get older, not to get too sort of misty-eyed and whimsical, but it's not so much about the manager as a person and what ability they have, but just the right person at the right time. to come into a club. I mean, I think there is a parallel universe where, you know, Gifu changed manager 3 months ago and someone came in and turned it around.
Mm.
And it might not be necessarily a manager who's better, in inverted commas, empirically than Makoto Kitano, but just a different person. You know, sometimes it's the right character or the right personality in the right setting that makes a difference. And I also think if we just talk about top level European football for a minute, I think at that level, players are so well paid, well rewarded for their efforts that I think 3 years with one coach is just as much as that coach could motivate them.
Mm.
And I think I don't agree that that's true in the J League, but what I do think is the J League is heavily influenced by what happens at European clubs. So I think J League clubs are moving inexorably towards a pattern of firing coaches every couple of seasons, regardless of whether that makes sense, because it's what the European clubs are doing. If you want another analogy, the way that most teams try to play the ball, keep the ball like Barcelona do, is just a direct reaction to, it's not always the best way to play with what you've got, but it's what is on TV. It's what's considered. Like, there are people in Japan running football clubs who don't really know how to run football clubs, so they're looking to countries where many football clubs are being run, and this is how you do it. Okay, you sack the manager every 3 years.
Yeah,
and I think that'll become more prevalent for better or for worse. So we're definitely going to have more of these sideways managerial changes rather than necessarily forward-thinking ones, I think.
I definitely agree with that. So while we're on the subject of kind of teams like Machida, teams like FC Gifu, let's look at the bottom of the table. So Gifu are already assured of a place in J3 next year. They ended up losing 5-1 at Tokyo Verdy for a pretty crap end to the season for FC Gifu. And contrary to what we said last week, John, it was Kagoshima United that ended up in 21st. They lost at Avispa Fukuoka, while Tochigi SC won at Jeff United.
I think I did say that Jeff, if you're going to, you know, play against anybody and need a win,
you play against Jeff. You did say that. And we've already talked about Machida winning at Montedio Yamagata. They won 2-1. I think they came from behind as well, if I remember that correctly, which was no mean feat to do. I think that so Kagoshima, yeah, just to, they lost two of the final three games, and just to kind of run out of steam in that particular way is pretty bad for them, and now they have to sweat it out. They'll be looking at Fujieda and Zespa Kusatsugunma's battle for the second spot in J3. We should also mention, I know Ben mentioned it on the pod this week as well, that Giravansky to Kyushu will be in J2 next year. They won 4-0 at home against Kamata Marisaniki to assure themselves of a top two finish, and they need just 1 point to almost certainly, without some kind of ridiculous goal difference swing, although Kyoto Kashiwa might prove the template for something like that. But they only need 1 point to clinch the J3 championship. So they'll be back in J2 next year, which will be exciting for opposition fans to go to that particular new stadium. Mikuni Stadium looks very nice indeed. But yeah, Kagoshima, they'll be sweating, and Tochigi did it. I mean, I don't know if you saw Tochigi coach Tasaka's interview post game, but he was crying his eyes out. He was, you know, he's been under pressure a lot, and but they've won three of their final four games. I mean, that's a hell of a way to end the season. And you know, Gifu were relegated, and everyone's come to terms with that. But it's hard not to feel kind of happy for Tasaka, who's had to endure a lot of stick, and he's had to work with a limited, shall we say, group of players. But, you know, like, it's a lot of pressure on people, and maybe people don't realise kind of what managers have to do at the bottom of the table. And to see his kind of reaction after the game and just, like, let it all out was kind of heartwarming for me to see. And so they're safe, and they'll be in J2 next year.
Yeah, I think the impression I got from the Tochigi fans that I interact with on Twitter is that they're a cock-a-hoop because they came into the season with a as you say, a limited squad, very, very low wage bill. You know, it was always going to be a tough season. So yeah, for them to get the wins that they needed right at the end and escape is good for them. And yeah, hopefully they can use that as a platform to build on for next year now.
Yeah. I mean, how much they will be able to build on it is a question for another time when Tochigi players and
I don't want to see Hennick up front anymore. Do you?
No, not really. But at this, I mean, the goal scorer Masaya Tashiro. I don't know if people know his backstory, but he was sacked by Gifu for being arrested for drink driving. What we're talking about 3 years ago now. He was really highly regarded when he came to Gifu, and I watched him play for half a season, and he was absolutely outstanding. I was so excited for him to develop at Gifu, but when he was out injured, he got into he had a few too many drinks, got into a car, drove it into the side of another car, was arrested, and subsequently sacked by the club. I have no arguments with that whatsoever, but at the same time, it's been nice to see how he's responded. And it's obviously, being a footballer, you get these kind of social privileges that a lot of people who aren't footballers don't get. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I've said that twice at the same time, so there's lots of things going on at the same time here, John. But I think it's good to see a redemption story. And for him to score the winning goal that kept them up and kept them in the league, I'm happy. And it's difficult to say that I'm happy for Tochigi, but I'm happy the coach was under a lot of pressure and he came through it. I'm happy that Masaya Tashiro has got his career and life seemingly back on track. Yeah, football's more, it's more than just tribalism. It's kind of being able to see good for what it is, I think, without getting too moral about stuff.
Yeah, I would add that Japan as a society is light on redemption stories like that. And people here, I mean, the expression like to cancel someone or like cancel culture is a new buzzword in kind of America, I guess, in our kind of social sphere. But it's been pretty common in Japan for like drug abuse and things. The example that often comes up with me in my day job is talking about someone like Robert Downey Jr., who just would never have got a second chance in Japan, I don't think. He would have like disappeared. Like he would never have got a job again after being in prison for like cocaine addiction and things. So yeah, it's good to see. I'm not sure if people, it depends, not everybody deserves a second chance. It's not what I'm saying. We'll get back onto football in a minute.
Sure.
But when people get given a second chance for whatever reason and they don't fuck it up and they do the right thing, you'd have to be a cold-hearted person not to respect them for that, I think.
No, I completely agree with that. And it's why I brought up Tashiro, because he's a very kind of specific example that I know the background of. I know him a little bit. He's a genuinely nice person, but he made a mistake that could have potentially been a very kind of life-altering mistake, but he's learned his lesson and he's come back from it. And that, I think that's to be applauded, I would say. Right, back to the football.
Enough moralising.
Enough, get off your high horse. Right, we've got two more questions and then we'll be done. One non J2 specific question and one J2 specific question. We'll go for the non J2 specific question. It's from Machida Dave. He's big news in Machida. He says to us, "What do you think about all the clubs' new stadium plans?" I'll come to that in a second. Is this the right way to go? For example, Sagamihara already have a pretty good ground for a J3 team. Is it better to use the money to get promoted and established? Others who focused on the stadium have got stuck, e.g. Nagano Paseiro. So just to give some context to this, Sagami Haro have announced plans or joint plans with other sports teams in their locale to build a brand new stadium. It looks really, really nice from the artist renditions. And they're planning to build that. Mito Hollyhock have announced plans to build a brand new stadium to be ready in 5 years, a football specific one, with both public and private money. And it goes all the way down. FC Osaka recently, they're in the J3 league. They're in the JFL, sorry. They're going to build a brand new 5,000 seat stadium for them. There are other clubs that I know that are in the assessment stage of planning new stadia. But Dave brings up a good point because, yeah, Nagano have got possibly one of the best stadiums in Japan, but their team is absolute full of donkeys and they're rubbish. Giravansky of Kyushu, once they built their stadium, I know they're back up this year, but they spent like 2-3 years in, I think they finished bottom of J3 last year, if I remember correctly. What do you think? Do you think it's better to use the money to get promoted and established? Or do you think that the money spent on a stadium will eventually reap its rewards?
I think this is a good question, and I'm glad that Dave has taken time out from going to, it seems to be, he's on 1 gig a week at the moment, I think, based on what I see on social media. So it's good that he's still got time to check in with us. Good on you, Dave. I think to use an expression, a Japanese English expression, I think it's case by case. And I think it really depends on the where the money comes from. It depends on how big the stadium's going to be and how much of a potential, white elephant it will be. I think the thing that we have to probably mention is that if the stadium's not going to be wholly owned by the club in future, then you have to factor in that success on the pitch is not directly linked to the stadium. So it's the fact that it generates revenue for conferences or, non-footballing events or whatever, even if it's Scythian. I think Stoke's Britannia Stadium's used for like university entrance exams and things. just something as mundane and as unsexy as that. It's the kind of thing that could prove to be a sort of business catalyst for the area that the stadium is based in. So, I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I think it really does depend if we take Machida's case as an example. I mean, they've demolished the backstand now and are building a new one, which is going to be, I think, similar to their very fancy main stand. So that I don't know if that motivates Dave's question. They're going one way of renovating the existing stadium. I think that might prove to be a strategic error in the long term because the problem is that stadium is in the wrong place. They would really, I think, have been better off. And it's not easy because we're talking about Tokyo where land is scarce and expensive. But you have to kind of, if you're asking people to come to an inconvenient location, then the facilities when they get there have got to be good. And you have to maximise revenue that's like non-match day revenue, if you like, as well. I think it's really a case-by-case scenario. But I think if the preparation, I think Sagami Hara doing it, is it like a kind of public consultation, maybe like a petition or something to kind of see how many
people
are interested? That kind of thing is probably the way to go, of just like feasibility studies to see what will work.
Well, I think that on the face of it, if you told me Sagami Hara were going to move into a 20,000-seater stadium, I'd say, why? Well, what are you doing that for? But I think it's being they're in partnership with a lot of other sports teams in Sagami Hara. So I know there's an American football team there. I know they've got like some kind of good handball and volleyball teams there that are going to share a certain sports park. And I don't think it's that far from Sagami Hara Station as well. And so access is not going to be too much of a problem. I think the thing that I've taken away from this, and it's not just these announcements, it's the ones that have preceded them as well. I mean, it's the Gamba, Osaka's like fancy new Panasonic Stadium. There's Seretso's redevelopment of Kincho Stadium that's going to be turned into a very nice stadium in and of itself. And I think it's the kind of both teams and local municipalities and local areas have they've cottoned on to the fact that a new purpose-built arena with a roof, Jesus Christ, don't forget the roof, stick a roof on it and people will come. I think that people I think that people in power have noticed and they've understood that people will come to comfortable facilities to watch football, and that will in turn kind of generate revenue for the areas around it. I think it's taken a little bit of time for the suits, if you to use in want of a better phrase,
the blue pills.
Exactly, the cufflink wearers that they have to that they've come to the kind of conclusion that yeah, it might be an expenditure, but if you do it right and you do it properly, then the rewards are there. And I think a lot more teams and a lot more areas, like even just off the top of my head now, Ryukyu are planning to do something similar. Kagoshima are in the planning stages of doing it. And I think that the more teams that see the benefits of it, like you look at Kitakyushu's new stadium. I'd say it's not new anymore, so it's 3 years old. But their old stadium was a pile of shit that was located so far away from the local train station, the main train station in Kokura. But this one's like a 10 or 15 minute walk from like a Shinkansen stop. And it's like, and like it took a bit of planning and it took a bit of kind of ingenuity with their roofless stand that backs onto the port, but it looks good. It's attracted a lot more people, and Panasonic Stadium is the same. Like it's just people want to watch. Like you said before, it's 2019. I don't want to get soaked when I watch FC Gifu, and people want comfort to go to their games, and that's what they're expecting. And so I think
as well, just speaking from my own experience, like the last couple of games I've been to take my six-year-old son with me, which kind of allows you to experience the match day in a slightly different way. So little things like Machida having the kind of Zeldy land, kind of with the bouncy castle and stuff in their kind of car park outside the stadium. I mean, it's a very minor addition, but like these kind of things make a difference to young families, first of all deciding whether they go at all, but also whether they have a good time and they want to come back. I mean, we went as a family to watch Verdi against Okayama at Komazawa, and we got to the stadium about 90 minutes before the kickoff and queued 45 minutes at one kiosk for drinks, then 45 minutes at another kiosk for food. And, you know, we've been at the stadium for 90 minutes and almost missed the kickoff. And it's that kind of thing of like, I'm a hardcore or was, I'm still, I'm a, like, I think hardcore football fan. So I'll put up with more of that kind of thing, but most people just won't.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the Yokohama FC game at the weekend, you know, promotion, you know, automatic promotion decided that rain was forecast. It was a sold out game, and Yokohama FC tweeted out an image on their official Twitter feed, which is like, the weather forecast is rainy. So, here's like an image of what you should be bringing with you. Mm. And I don't know if you saw this, but it was like, you know, one, your poncho, two, a bin bag to put your poncho in, three, rain boots, four, umbrella. And like, I mean, I'm quite a lazy person. I'd be thinking, nope. I'll watch it. I pay for DAZN already. I'll watch it on DAZN. So I think that is something that clubs have got to be aware of. And this isn't specific to stadium, but just more generally, like, it's got to be fun. It's got to be easy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people are not gonna want to do it, not gonna want to repeat it in a hurry. So yeah, it's just something that they need to think about. People pay a lot of money for tickets. Season tickets are very reasonable, but on the day tickets, walk ups are not usually. And you've got to give people a positive experience that makes them wanna come back. I mean, Angus at Japan Footy used to say that, like, the free seating is a problem. you know, yeah. because the reasonably priced tickets are often a free seat, but some people just don't want to turn up 3 hours before the kickoff and line up outside to show what a great fan they are, you know. And it's, I think it's something that needs to be looked at. But I think where you're right is, I'm sure that with these newer stadiums like Panasonic Stadium, and I'm sure Kyoto will be the same next year, mm-hmm. is the per, even though attendances often spike very briefly or not at all, the per spend, if you like, I'm starting to sound like a suit myself, but the amount of money and time that a fan spends is much higher.
Yeah, most definitely.
At these new stadiums. Like, I mean, the last Verdi game I went to, like, literally, I could have thrown money at them, and they wouldn't have taken it because you're just in this massive line. So, I think that's something that they. It's a bit like your common Mariners bringing out 8 different uniforms a season, you know, or clubs who do like, oh, this player made his 5th appearance and scored a goal. Here's the T-shirt.
Yes.
And it's like fans must buy them, mustn't they? Otherwise, they wouldn't come out. And I think it's the case that Gambas Ground is a brilliant example where it's next to basically a theme park or shopping mall.
Yep.
You know, people go and spend like all day.
Yep. Yep.
And then, you know, maybe catch the game as well. And they spent like you spend like 15,000 yen in an afternoon there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that that's the language that suits understand, Stuart.
So, I'll take your word for it. I don't wear cufflinks. I roll my sleeves up. I'm one of the guys, you know.
One of the people. So I think to answer Dave's question is yes, sometimes.
Yeah, I'll just edit out all that stuff in the middle.
It's not a yes, no, but it's a how it's done question.
Do you know what? I think the question is really difficult, but I think it's one of the most important ones that we can talk about. As likers of Japanese football, I think it's we've talked about it loads of times before. It's just like attracting more people to stadia is the way to grow, and attracting young families as well with disposable income. Jesus, that sounds like very suits as well.
I think just on this point as well, the best people to ask are fans of clubs that have recently moved stadium.
Yes.
And I can guarantee that by half time of the first Kyoto game in that beautiful looking new ground, as long as they're not 6-0 down, you ask any fans, would you rather be back at Nishikyogoku with like the worst pitch in world football? I mean, how many fans are going to be, how many Gamba fans like, oh, it was much better at the old dilapidated ground with the running track and no roof. I never see that comment.
No, you weren't.
On Twitter. So I think even Giravan's fans, if you'd said to them, look, it's going to be terrible for 2 years.
Yep.
It's going to be awful. But then you're going to come back and bang in with, I mean, they've pretty much got like the third best ground in the division in J2 next year.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And, you know, if you're talking about J League's 100-year plan, 2 years is not a long time. You'd take that. So, something to think about. I mean, the problem comes when teams move to a new stadium and sort of handle it badly. Thinking of my own team, Stoke City here, because when we moved, it was a disaster at first. But soon people are like, yes, it's nice. I can go to the toilet at half time now. And I don't have to, it doesn't take me 2 hours to get home.
Sure.
You know, things like just very small, sort of what we call like quality of life improvements. Mm. And you find a lot of football fans like are not stupid, and they know that they're not watching a Premier League quality game. That's not what attracts them or puts them off. It's the fact that I have to go 3 hours early to make sure I can get a seat where I can actually see the pitch.
Yeah.
I got to bring ponchos for everybody. I have to bring extra drinks in case they sell out at the kiosk before the kickoff. You know, all this crap that. And I will say, I think we're in a good position as sort of like fans, if you like, or paying fans. Do you think people in the media generally don't get to see that side of the game very much? I mean, it used to annoy me heavily as a Premier League away supporter going to grounds like Goodison Park, where if you're an away fan, it's a shithole. It's an absolute shithole. And you get all this bollocks about what always got all character and all this, and you're like, you're charged £40 for like an obstructed view on a wooden seat, which is a fire hazard. And yeah, it wasn't the press box, you know, kind of thing.
Mm.
So yeah, I think that's something that if more people who wrote about football and were paid to have it had to come 3 hours beforehand, wait for a shuttle bus, pay for the shuttle bus, couldn't get a drink, couldn't get anything to eat, missed 50 minutes of the second half taking their son to the toilet, then it would change a lot. It would have changed a lot more quickly than it has done.
I agree with that. Are you all right there, man? Are you okay?
Yeah, fine. Yeah. What's next? Rob Downey Jr., proletariat rising up.
Right. Well,
when are we doing the Jeremy Corbyn?
This isn't question time, by the way. This is J Talk extra time. Listen. Right, we're gonna finish
one more question. Yeah,
one more question. It's from Johnny Nicol. Yeah, it's from Johnny Nicol. He's a Gamba fan. He does the new Gamba Osaka blog. I would suggest you go and check it out if you're into the J1 kind of stuff. A nice, easy question, John, so don't worry. Which player or club exceeded expectations most this year, and which player/club underwhelmed the most? Now, I've just sprung that on you. So I've had a little bit of time to think about this, so I'll give my answer first while you make some notes. I think the conventional wisdom would say Mito. And I think anybody that says Mito would be more than justified in saying that. But I think I'm going to go for a little bit. I don't know if it's contrarian. I don't know if it's a little bit deeper than that. I'll go for Swegon Kanazawa. They finished 11th this year, finished above teams like Nagasaki, Tokyo Verde, Fukuoka, Jeff. I thought they'd struggle, excuse me, but they've actually done really well. I mean, to finish on, what they got, 60 points, 61 points, they've done really well. And I think they've kind of flown under the radar because Mito Hollyhock have done so well. But I think that Seiken Kanazawa deserve a lot of credit for the way they've played. The players, one of them is a Seiken Kanazawa player, Hisashi Ohashi, center or midfielder. Really, really good player. Love watching him play. Kind of just does everything really well. He doesn't do anything spectacularly, but he does the simple stuff well. And I think you'll be seeing kind of a lot more of him. The other player that I had in mind when this question came up was Ryuya Kikuchi. I think that's it. Yeah, it's got a really weird kanji for his first name, but I'm pretty sure it's Ryuya. Central defender from Renault for Yamaguchi. Absolute beast. He's huge. He's unstoppable in the air. Caveat, he's part of a team which conceded 70 goals this year. So he can't be a superstar in that environment, but I don't think he'll be at Renault for Yamaguchi next year. I think he's got the potential to be a really, really good centre-back in the not-too-distant future at a bigger team. At a J1 side, and yeah, Hisashi Ohashi and Ryuya Kikuchi, I think, will be my picks for players that have done really well this year. John, team? I won't go for underwhelming teams because it'll just depress me. But
it's too depressing.
Positive,
fair enough.
Positive.
I will piggyback. You forced me to promise not to steal your picks before we started recording. But on Kanazawa, I will just mention they only lost 11 games all season, which is one fewer than Yamagata, who finished sixth. If they could have just turned some of their 16 draws into wins, they might have been a bit more of a threat, at the top end of the table in the playoffs. And I think on Kanazawa, the word I always think of is like an obdurate opponent, that I never fancied anybody to beat them this season. At any time we were predicting games, if anyone had Kanazawa, I'd be like, Kanazawa might guess. And I think if you build that reputation as like an awkward customer, that definitely stands you in good stead when you're the team that nobody's really looking forward to playing against, for example. In terms of teams that have been a positive surprise, a weird answer, but I think Ryukyu did light up the league for better or for worse. I think some of that is trading on the fact that it's the team from one of the most beautiful and picturesque parts of Japan, really, Okinawa, and conceding 80 goals in 42 games is pretty that's putting up some pretty impressive stats there.
It's good work.
I think only about half of them were down to Ryoji Fukui in the end, so he must do better next season. But yeah, just the amount of times that Sataki Uejo scored brilliant goals. I think I gave him a shout out as well. I know Koji Suzuki was the key man, maybe in the first half of the season, but yeah, he Sataki Uejo was one player who I really, you know, when he collected the ball sort of 25 yards from goal, I always had the anticipation something might happen here, he might do something. Yeah, another player I liked and a team that I liked, but they just didn't have enough, was Okayama. We talked about Hayato Nakama endlessly, so we won't bore the listeners. But yeah, he was again a player who made me sort of lean forward, sit up a bit when he picked up the ball in a dangerous area of the pitch. And to be honest, for most of the season, a dangerous area of the pitch was anywhere in the other team's half when he got the ball. I also have a left field shout out for a player that I really enjoyed watching.
Go for it.
It's the guy from Ehime. The midfielder. I'm just checking his name now because I can't remember the
Yuta Kamiya.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I don't know anything about him, but he was another one who I thought he is playing. He is. You sometimes watch a team and like, I don't know what this guy is doing here. He should be playing in a far better team. And some of his skills, close control, and the way he can go around people. I'm not really sure why he is at Ehime, and I'm not sure he will be next year. So give him a shout out.
He won't be because he's on loan from Shonan Belmare.
There you go. Well, I'm not sure why he's not in their team.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that was my next point. Yeah, I think he's more than good enough to be.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be a mainstay of the Olympic team because I think he's been part of Hajime Moriyasu's. Under 22 team for the last 2 or 3 years, actually. So
that's good background I was not aware of, but yeah, I really enjoyed watching confirms, him. And yeah, Ehime might have been in a lot more trouble without his prompting this season.
Well, I mean, they didn't finish too far off trouble. They only finished 2 points off the relegation zone, but yeah, let's not finish on negativity.
Debbie Downer.
Yeah, let's take it up. Yeah, so the playoffs are this weekend. Like I said before, Omiya hosting Monterrey Yamagata, Tokushima hosting Vanfori Corfu. So those will be two really kind of really good games to watch. I mean, you'll have to pick and choose which one to watch, but both of them will be really good. And I'm sure we'll be back next week. Hopefully we can go into a bit more depth in our review of those games and give a good look forward to the playoff final. But for now, John, I think we've spoken for more than enough time. Thanks for joining me again. I know, just to give the listeners a quick sneak peek into what we're doing, it's now 1 a.m. on Thursday morning.
It's cold in the spare room.
I'm going to fall asleep on the sofa.
Not allowed to use the heating until December.
John, enjoy the weekend's games and we'll reconvene next week, all right?
We'll do, Stuart. Yeah, thanks. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. And yeah, we'll be back to try and make sense of it again next week.
Most definitely. All that remains for me to do now is to thank the Patreons as well who make this podcast possible with their donations. And yeah, we look forward to speaking to you next week. But in the meantime, enjoy the playoffs and goodbye for now.